papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is your half hour of commentary and analysis, and even some days, some insight into media issues of the week. We welcome you. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We will have here Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of WAMC, commentator, columnist, etc. How are you, sir?
Hi, Chief.
Don't call me Chief. Let's see how many people remember what that is a line from. We have Ira Fussfeld, a longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston.
Nice to be back.
Great to see you. Momentarily, we'll get to that. And Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist, UAlbany professor. How's it going there?
Great. Thanks great, for having great. Me.
Yeah, absolutely. I introduce myself as the editor of the Times Union, which I am as we sit here at these microphones. But by the time this program airs, I will be editor at large. I don't know what that means. I'm going to romp around the capital region, editor at large. Help.
But you're going to have a lot of responsibilities, including the all-important editorial page, which around here means a great deal.
Well, I don't know that opinion pages make that as much difference as they once did, or if maybe they never did and we just thought so. So I've had that as part of my responsibility as editor, but we're carving that out as part of my job and my...
Well, you're not really looking forward to it, despite your fact that you've got a stopwatch in your hand. So
yeah.
Well, there's a good way to find out, Rex, how important it is. You write an editorial about any politician on the stage and say something negative about them, and you'll find out how important it is.
Well, yes, we do hear from them.
Did you watch the weekly where it showed the New York Times editorial board process in selecting their endorsement, which turned out to be very controversial? But at any rate, if the three of you have not watched it, you should try to find it, because I think you'll find the process will ring a bell of familiarity, but also very interesting that it is the New York Times. But
it was quite something that they had such a transparent process. They involved, was it 16 people in interviewing all these candidates, and made that very visible, and then announced, on this date we will announce our endorsements. Who knew, though, that you could endorse two candidates as they did? If I had known that, we would have had a much easier time all these years with endorsements.
It was not a good way to end it, in my opinion.
Hey, I love the New York Times. I do. I read it several times each night as I wake up, and I love it. But it was a dumb editorial. I mean, the idea that you would endorse two people.
I'm happy they were two women. I think that was great.
Right.
I think that they didn't want to make the decision between progressive and moderate.
Well,
it's
but
a different
isn't that
discussion
their job?
Over who's the best candidate.
But isn't that their job?
I'm not sure that they saw it that way. I like the editorial.
They were saying that it's up to the Democratic Party. They at least narrowed the field. I mean, I think that would be helpful to the voters.
Yeah, but if you're going to make a decision on, if you're going to endorse a candidate, you endorse a candidate. Several of us have been in the position of having to make that ultimate decision. We have on occasion endorsed people who we were not crazy about, but who we felt were better than the other person. And the voters have to make that choice, so give them some guidance.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Ira.
For once.
Right. So anyway, one of the questions about this notion of voting is one that we've talked about somewhat before, and that is journalists who, in effect, sacrifice their right to vote in primaries in order to keep their politics private. This is a matter of some controversy. Famously, one of the editors of the Washington Post never voted lest his own personal interests affect the nature of their coverage. It seems extreme to me, but we do ask that our journalists not participate at all in the political process. We certainly expect them to go ahead and vote, and we don't tell them to avoid party registration, but should we tell them that?
You know what, Rex? Massachusetts, where I live, is a great state. You don't have to show your cards. All you have to do is register as an unenrolled, not independent, but unenrolled voter, and then you can take a ballot in either primary. So while it's not perfect, it certainly is preferable to having to register in New York to vote in a single party. You have to be a Democrat to get a vote.
I'm very much a hardliner about this. I'm a chauvinist about this. I don't believe that reporters should register in political parties. I don't believe that reporters should be involved with any kind of public interest efforts that might make people doubt whether their reporting is objective. Rosemary's going to shoot me. I was trying to make the case to reporters that they should not march in pro-choice demonstrations. I just felt, particularly in a small town, people know who you are, you're very visible, and if it gives them a hook, the people who read their newspaper who might be a different point of view as you are, to point out that they are active in this cause, that will put the work in the newspaper in doubt in their mind.
And I think it's all subterfuge. What you're doing is saying suppress and hide your feelings. To me, in a small town, if they know, good, tell me. If in a big town, tell me I'm pro-life, I'm pro-choice, I'm a Republican, and then you judge what I write based on that. I think it's incredibly hypocritical. How many editorials have you written saying get out and vote, get involved, be part of your community, and then you're telling your reporters don't do that, don't vote, don't be part of the activism? I think that's really, really old school, and it needs to change.
But Rosemary, is there a line? In other words, we had a guy a long time ago here who marched around with the red hat guys from New York.
And green berets.
The Guardian Angels, they were called.
Angels, yes. and we said, no, you can't do that. You know, it was offensive. So is there a line, Rosemary?
So what if he had given lots of money secretly to that group, and then you assigned him to a story covering the group? He would have been obeying your rules, and that's far more deceptive.
Well, too long.
No, I think sometimes as a journalist, you have to make choices, you know, that you're going to either march and donate and really get involved in something and then choose not to cover it. I speak all the time against Trump. I can never cover a Trump story, and I realize that my
bosses do. So what do you do, though, then, about a reporter whose beat is to cover Trump?
Then the rules are different.
Oh, sure.
Then the rules are very different.
Great.
If giving them something, then I need somebody here who is not a Trump hater.
Right.
A never Trumper should not be covering Trump, for
right.
example.
So if you're a political reporter assigned to cover a campaign, you can't be taking an active role in campaigns. I think that's something we'd all agree about.
That's my point. And particularly hard to monitor in a small newspaper. If you have your political reporter who is registered as a Democrat, are you going to send them out to the Republican convention, and are the Republicans going to think they're getting a fair shake?
Well, look, you know, it's odd. You mentioned the famous case at the Washington Post where the editor did not vote, did not register, but he married a woman who worked forever for the National Democratic Committee. So, I mean, it's just the alliances are still there. You don't make them go away. What really needs to be done are systematic fixes. Newsrooms need more diversity so that you have Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, which we do not and never have. And maybe we need to look, as Alan says, at the way we do primaries. They're kind of dumb. They're really old-fashioned.
Although even in states with open primaries like Ohio, there's a record, for example, of where you voted, of which primary you went to.
What ballot you
even
pulled,
though, yeah.
for example.
Yeah. You know, the person who I consider the foremost journalistic ethicist, Kelly McBride of the Poynter Institute, had this to say about it. She says, a news leader who encourages her staff to avoid a primary is ignoring the difference between personal objectivity, which is impossible, and the objectivity of the reporting process. This, in turn, accelerates the oversimplification of journalism values. You know, there are things built into our processes in the newsroom to try to avoid the appearance and the very reality of bias. That's why we have multiple editors reading stories. That's why we have certain values of the way we prepare stories that are trying to make stories fair, even if a reporter has a particular personal bias.
Well, so, but there seems to me to be a bit of a problem here. You're all going to yell at me, but I'm sorry. Trump is a very bad man. He's a very bad president. He deserves to be impeached. Hey, I just said it. Therefore, there's a certain reality. So now you want to balance that by making sure you find somebody who can go and be a pro-Trumper in order to say, hey, we're balanced. You know, there's a reality. The reality is the guy's bad.
Well, I don't know of any editor who has gone out to try to find people based upon their political affiliation. I never ask a reporter candidate their political affiliation, because I don't consider it relevant to our reporting process because we have this stuff built in. I think Rosemary's point about needing to have a more diverse newsroom is certainly true, because over the last generation, reporting ranks have been filled with people who are, we've lost that connection to conservative blue-collar working families. There isn't as much of that as there used to be in our newsrooms.
I think the incident at CNN, which we may or may not get to, with Don Lemon and Rick Wilson laughing and speaking in hokey, you know, hillbilly southern voices is an example.
That was outrageous.
Oh, my God.
Can you remind us what it was?
Oh, well, here's Don Lemon, an anchor on CNN, ended up having a laughing fit as he hosted two guys here. You know, CNN often has this split screen. We got
Hollywood
guy on his Hollywood Square.
Exactly.
You got a guy on his left, a guy on his right. So here's the anchor in the middle. There was Wajahat Ali, a CNN contributor, and then there was Rick Wilson, who's a former Republican strategist. And they were laughing and mocking Trump. They were doing, you know, you lead us with your geography and your maps and your spelling and your math and your reading. They were making fun
of... Well, Wilson made a joke, though, relative to the Pompeo incident and the map.
Right.
And Wilson said Trump would not be able to pick Ukraine from a map if the map had you and a picture of a crane.
If an actual physical crane next to it.
That was allegedly what got Lemon going.
That
but then
started
they
the
started
laughing.
The rest of it.
Yeah, and then they started making fun of Trump supporters by giving mock hillbilly accents to them.
But you know, as Freud said, there is no joke. And so that what happens is, in that case, there wasn't a joke. You know, it was a terrible situation. I'm fascinated. We got more mail this week, for whatever it's worth, about Mary Louise Kelly than anything I've ever seen here. We got lots of donations. And not only that, all the people who run public radio stations around the country were posting that they had unsolicited amounts of money coming in honor of Mary Louise Kelly and what she had done.
You know, I have a different view of the Mary Louise Kelly thing than I did when I first read it. I thought it was outrageous, as we all did.
Let's remind everybody what it was.
Sure. She had an interview with the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. It was predominantly about Iran, about the Middle East. But at the end, she threw in a question about Ukraine, and it was a hard one. She wanted to know what he had done to protect the former ambassador there who had been under attack, as we now know, from Trump and Giuliani. And he went berserk about that. He stormed off and then called her into his office. So the aide said, "Don't bring your tape recorder." And while there, berated her, swore at her, and said, "Do you even care about Ukraine? Do you think anyone does?" And pulled out a map that had no names or lines on it and said, "Point to Ukraine," which she did. The woman has an advanced degree from Cambridge in European studies. This was not a difficult assignment. And
this
by the way, by her
account, because, again, she was in a room without her microphone, without any tape rolling. So this is her account of him going into a private room with her, and this is what happened.
Correct.
So what are you thinking about
this? His account was that she had misidentified Ukraine.
Implied.
She implied it. It was really sneaky, wasn't it?
Well, she also,
and that
he was
lied
a liar.
About, because he said, "Don't bring your recorder." She did not interpret that, as none of us would, and he is a senior government official, as being off the record. Those are two different things.
So what's your point?
My point is...
He also alleged that she was told not to ask questions about Ukraine,
and she has her whole email trail that said she definitely was going to ask, and nothing was off the table.
Yes.
However, here's my thought about it. I think it's outrageous, but how is it different than Nancy Pelosi yelling at a conservative reporter, "Don't mess with me about that"? How is it different than Joe Biden, I'll give you an example, who yelled at a former Fox reporter who was asking him about the Biden situation in Ukraine? How is that different? They were rude to him, too, and we did not go nuts over it.
We did mention it on the show, but there is also a difference of degree. I mean, Joe Biden getting kind of ticked off at someone versus Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, storming off from an interview, taking her into a private room, using the F word on her, and then lying, apparently, about what happened, certainly lying about the arrangements, the ground rules for the interview, because she has a document supporting that, and refusing to answer the fundamental question. That I think there's a difference of degree. It's not unusual for politicians to get ticked off at reporters, Democrats or Republicans alike.
Yeah, don't forget Martha McSally this past week's telling your favorite reporter from CNN, "I'm not going to talk to you, you're a liberal hack," and storming off, and also campaigning on it, raising money, saying, "See, I'm mean to liberal reporters."
And who was it? Who is my liberal?
Manu Raju.
Manu Raju. I love Manu Raju.
Yeah.
And I think he should have a Nobel Prize.
Why do you love Manu Raju?
I tell you, every time you turn around, this guy has got a microphone in somebody's face.
Huh.
He gets the stuff that nobody else gets. From my perspective, he's just terrific. And when they have the other guy on, There's another guy, too, who's up there.
Oh, there's another guy. Yeah. Well, there are a lot of them are
guys.
There
are a lot of good ones now.
Well, there's another guy up there at the Capitol who puts the microphone in front of him. He's not nearly as good. No, I think Manu Raju deserves to be decorated.
I think that we, as journalists, have to expect that in a partisan atmosphere like this, in a heated atmosphere of impeachment, we're going to be treated rudely. And the answer is...
Not that rudely.
You act, yes, as rudely as that and worse.
Using
Trump treats
the
F word? Yes.
No.
And yes, I do.
I said no.
I'm sorry, Pompeo has been a guy with a temper forever, and if you're a journalist and you're upset by the F word, then you shouldn't be in the business because you're going to hear it.
Yeah.
And she handled it right, and so did Manu Raju. You absolutely keep your professionalism. She thanked him for the time as he was yelling the F word at him. Thank you for your time, Mr. Secretary, and walked out. That's how a journalist acts. Your goal is to get the information, not to show them up.
Well, we agree on that. However, we have a Trump administration headed by the head bully, and we have a guy like Pompeo who is, you know, an associate bully. And when he acts that way, which is, talk about being unprofessional, he's the unprofessional one.
Well,
yes.
And the thing of the implications of this, you've got a Secretary of State who treats a reporter this way, who has sometimes insulted reporters, but he has sometimes issued statements calling on authoritarian governments to respect press freedom. And here's a guy who himself is not doing it. And in the aftermath of this incident with Mary Louise Kelly, NPR was disinvited from traveling on the Secretary of State's
plane. That's an unbelievable story. So tell everybody about that, Rex.
Well, this was what was supposed to happen. They were supposed to have Kellerman. What's her name? Was a reporter who was supposed to be on a flight.
And
Michelle Kellerman
reporter.
Was supposed to be on a trip with Pompeo to the UK, Ukraine, and so on. And instead, the State Department said that they will not be allowing the NPR reporter to go on the trip. And Nancy Barnes, the head of NPR News, says, calls upon them to make an explanation. There are serious issues at stake. There is no explanation from the State Department.
Shades of Dick Nixon saying, I never want to see anybody from the Washington Post in the White House. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's led by Trump, who stopped having press briefings at all. And the press, I don't think we're that off for it. I think to sit there and listen to Huckabee lie over and over again about the motives, being paid by my money to lie to the press, was not very helpful to me. I don't think we've missed anything. And the same thing with this. If NPR can't go on the plane with the Secretary of State, fine. They go to those countries, they work with the reporters in those countries, and they'll get the same story.
Well, they're punishing NPR writ large for the alleged transgression of one specific reporter and the non-recognition of the fact that NPR is a major broadcast outlet in this country and should have a representative covering the Secretary of State, ignoring that. It's only going to happen more often. See,
yeah.
I think
can't disagree.
You alluded to it briefly. The Democrats do much the same because they're not largely in power now. But I believe Trump has given them cover because they're taking advantage of this press are the enemy of the people, and they're doing the same thing.
I don't know. I don't think they are. I don't think there's that false equivalence there. There is not a Democrat I know of who has issued a statement, you know, attacking the media broadly in the same way. Pompeo's official statement on State Department letterhead said, it is no wonder that the American people distrust many in the media when they so consistently demonstrate their agenda and their absence of integrity. In fact, as Rosemary points out, Mary Louise Kelly demonstrated integrity, and her contemporaneous notes of setting up the interview demonstrate that the State Department was lying about the ground rules. So I don't know of any officials, any Democrats who, while they get mad at the Washington press corps, who have behaved this way.
However, it's just a different tactic. The Democrats are as bad. They use a different tactic, which is to ignore the press. And let's talk about the big Democrat, Obama, who also bypassed the press. He used his own, as Trump has done, you know, usually with Twitter. But Obama is the one who began bypassing the major media and going directly to the people. And he also totally ignored freedom of information. He was not a good press president. And yes, he was kind of nice and polite and erudite.
Comparison. There's no comparison, though. I agree with you. He was worse than Bill Clinton on openness. But by comparison to what this administration is doing in shutting out the press, in refusing to have any press briefings, I don't agree that there is no value in White House press briefings. The fact that the White House has closed down channels to have daily conversation with senior policymakers, which is what used to be the policy for decades. decades now, sets this apart. If you're a White House correspondent, the only access you have to the top level is leaks.
And which Trump, they every day
and
on
Trump
the White House lawn.
Denouncing things and offering more lies, you know, because he does not speak truth anytime he opens his mouth. It's outrageous. And I'm sorry, that is a factual statement based upon Washington
Post
reporting.
That is the story.
And that, Rex, is why you're our chief, and we're proud of it.
A chief. It was Superman, of course.
Yes, Perry White.
Perry White, the editor of the Daily Planet, who Jimmy Olsen, the young cub reporter, always referred to as chief. And he would say, don't call me chief.
And in the TV show, the Daily Planet building was the Los Angeles City Hall, which I see frequently.
Is that
so
right?
That's the building they used as the Daily
How
Planet.
How interesting.
What do you know?
Where else do you get this
other than the Media Project? If you want to offer
one of those insights.
Your thought, yeah, the insights, we promise you. We promise. It may not be what you expect. Media Project comes to you from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Romeo, and I'm Rex Smith. You can share your thoughts, media@wamc.org, if you want to jump into the conversation here. Here's an interesting issue that is something that we sometimes confront in the media when we have access to information that might actually hurt people by its reporting. TMZ, a celebrity news site, was the first to post the story that Kobe Bryant had died in a California helicopter crash. Here is the interesting thing. TMZ reported it so quickly that the police had not had time to notify family members of the victims. So what was the right thing to do here? Did TMZ act inappropriately, or was it their job to report quickly what had happened to a celebrity?
Well, the first thing I'd say about TMZ is that they are remarkable in their ability to get this information before anybody else. They did it with Michael Jackson. They did it with Kobe Bryant. There was another high-profile one that escapes my mind. Now, I don't know whether they're paying...
Whitney Houston.
They were the first to report Whitney Houston. Now, I'm not sure how they could have gotten it that quickly. Are they in every police station in Los Angeles? I don't know.
It's in the agency of the celebrities. That's how they get it.
What do you mean by that?
You know, like Whitney Houston's press secretary. Whitney Houston's assistant. I think they're all in the employ.
They make the calls and they say this is happening.
They have
such a huge network of tipsters. I think that's the thing. Because this is their business, they are embedded in all these places the way, you know, a big reporting corps is embedded in a city in the old days.
Is this like Nightcrawler, that Jeff Gyllenhaal movie where he was staging accidents so there'd be dead people for him to report?
Right.
Is that what you're
great
implying?
Movie,
you know, Ray Graff, our wonderful Ray Graff, has one of those police scanners next to his desk, and he listens all the time, and we've had some stories out of that. You know, there are a lot of ways to get information.
But in the case of Kobe Bryant, the helicopter goes down. The family hasn't been notified. To my knowledge, a very small circle of people would have known who was on that helicopter. The people in FAA or whatever the local agency was could look at the passenger manifest, but somebody had to have given that information.
Are you sure the Kobe Bryant family didn't know?
No.
I think the Bryant family did.
I think it was the other families who didn't know.
Oh, I see.
And in this case, all right, okay, the default for the journalist is timeliness and importance. This is a world celebrity. His death is major international news. And those police are saying, well, no, we didn't get the coach's wife's mother doesn't know. So we're holding it up. I think the police hold some responsibility in this. And TMZ didn't jump the gun. They had it right. And they did the news thing.
So, Rosemary, your position on this, just to be clear, is if it were you, you would have gone with the story.
Yes.
I'm with Rosemary.
Yeah, I am.
I think it's... no fair. You were forced to chime in here this time.
No, I know. I don't always agree with Rosemary, as we all know. However, you know, it seems to me that's your business and that's what you're doing. And everybody's competing with each other all over the place. And this is what you do.
Now, it does backfire. Do you remember Gabby Gifford? She's the congresswoman
who
was shot in the head. And NPR, I believe, reported that she was dead. And it was actually not badly sourced. It came from her office. And the woman was gravely wounded. She almost did die.
CBS News reported that Jim Brady had died in the Reagan assassination attempt.
In the Kobe Bryant situation, ABC has suspended a reporter who reported that the other Bryant children were on the helicopter.
Well, yeah, he was suspended for that, wasn't
he? He was suspended yesterday.
For good reason. That was bad information, you know? I mean, if you make mistakes that are bad.
But you just cited other examples.
Yeah.
You know, it also doesn't even make sense. His youngest child is an infant in arms. It's just a few months old. I mean, wouldn't you have immediately said, wait, he had all the kids on? I think that was some bad reporting.
You know, one of the interesting elements is these specialized digital sites and how the traditional media, the legacy media, as we're called, treat them. Oftentimes, a TMZ report, other media are reluctant to use that, even to republish and attribute it to them.
CNN did not report the name until the LA Times reported it. The LA Times waited a considerable amount of time to report it, although it did put on its website, we are aware of reports of something involving Kobe Bryant, but we have not confirmed it, and we'll post something when we do.
Well, you know what? It's a fierce competitive game. We all know that the news gathering and being first seems to matter a great deal. Nevertheless, I just wonder, I mean, yesterday I had the governor of New York on, and I was fascinated by...
Speaking of people who curse out reporters.
Yeah, well, you can give reporters a hard time. Yes, you're absolutely right. But I was fascinated by the fact that each news outlet had a different way of covering it. Some said in a radio interview, they didn't mention WAMC. Some said on WAMC. And at least one actually used my name as the interviewer on it. So each of these sources, each of these places have different ways of crediting their competitors.
I want to make one thing clear that, yes, it would be a very nice thing to wait until everybody was notified and then go with it. But we're not in the business of being nice. I'm not sure that you can always be a nice human being and a good reporter at the same time. To my mind, Vanessa Bryant is hurt by the fact that her husband and daughter are dead, not by the fact that we printed that they were dead.
Yes. I've had exactly that situation where I had a situation where a young man very publicly committed suicide, leaping off a bridge during rush hour in the middle of Albany. And we ended up reporting it because traffic was tied up for hours. People wanted to know what was going on. The parents came in very upset with us a couple of weeks later, not because we had reported the boy's name, because we had done that respectfully. We had talked to his friends. We had done the things you're supposed to do when you report about suicide, including steps to try to discourage mimicking. But they were upset that we had published a photograph from a distance showing a covered body next to the road. They were upset, of course, about their son's death. I understand that. Mm-hmm. So my job was simply to absorb their anger, which I think was misplaced at me for using a photograph. You know, our job is to tell the truth, and sometimes there is pain involved in it. It's unavoidable. Anyway, we're out of time.
No.
No. We've got to talk about Warren Buffett.
No, Warren Buffett getting out of the newspaper business.
This show ought to be
an hour.
We'll
get to that. We'll get to that next week. All right, The Media Project is about over. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, and I'm Rex Smith, editor-at-large of the Times Union, as you hear this. We'll see you next week.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.